from the campus of the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School. This is Knowledge at Wharton on Business Radio. Here's your host, Dan Loney.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Knowledge at Wharton here on Sirius XM 132, Business Radio powered by the Wharton School. Thanks for joining us. It is the 10th of September as we come to you from Philadelphia and the campus of the University of Pennsylvania. Great having you spending time with us. Here's what we have coming up for you on the show today. At the top, more on Nissan. You may remember we talked a little bit about this just a few days ago. Well, now the latest development is that the current CEO resigned yesterday because of receiving higher levels of executive compensation. He is the second CEO in a year to be pushed out the door at the Japanese automaker, along with Carlos Ghosn. We'll discuss the move and what the car company needs to do to get itself back on track, both from the executive side, but also from the sales side as well, as those numbers have been dipping in recent months. Then in about 30 minutes, we're joined by author Steve Farber. His new book titled Love is Just Damn Good Business is out, and we're going to discuss why loving what you do and loving to serve others are key steps to business success. Then in hour number two, we're going to look at relief efforts in the Bahamas around Hurricane Dorian. We're going to talk with one well-known chef who has been in the region the last several days, helping to prepare meals for those affected by the disaster. Plus, what can we do and policymakers do to better coordinate relief efforts? And then in our final 30, we will look at the push by various states for antitrust probes against tech companies Facebook and Google over their dominance in search, the issues surrounding personal data, and much more. All of that over the next 2 hours. Your comments and questions are welcome throughout. The way for you to join in is either by phone at 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866, or if you'd like, send us a comment on Twitter at BizRadio132, B-I-Z Radio132, or you can use my Twitter account, which is at Dan Loney, L-O-N-E-Y-21. First, though, here's what you need to know from today's business headlines. And we start out with the news about Jack Ma, the billionaire who ushered in the e-commerce era into China, announced that he's officially stepping down as Alibaba's executive chairman. He's celebrating his retirement with a big bash in an Olympic-sized stadium in the company's hometown. After two decades of running Alibaba and making it into a $460 billion business, he has decided to pivot full-time to philanthropy. JP Morgan Chase is going to provide businesses on its WePay platform the ability to make same-day deposits. The goal is to cut down the time it takes a small business to see a payment clear, especially when it occurs on a weekend. The service is expected to be available to all customers by the end of the year. It's designed to compete with Square and with Stripe. Wendy's is investing $20 million in its stores to support the full launch of a breakfast menu nationwide. As part of the move, they will hire an additional 20,000 employees. The news also led Wendy's to cut its profit forecast for the year. Meanwhile, McDonald's has made its third tech acquisition this year. It has now agreed to buy Apprente, which uses artificial intelligence to help understand speech. The goal is to be able to automate the drive-through to cut down on service time, as well as improve self-order kiosks in some stores. And Target says that it plans to hire 130,000 holiday workers this season, up from its goal of 120,000 last year. Most of the jobs are going to be in retail locations, with some at distribution and fulfillment centers. Nissan Motor Company is losing another CEO in less than a year. Hiroto Saikawa announced yesterday that he is resigning effective September 16th. An internal investigation found that he received elevated compensation in 2013 after employees falsified documents to increase his performance pay. Saikawa says he will return the money he received through the illegal activity. The resignation comes less than a year after an investigation led to the arrest and ouster of former chairman and CEO Carlos Ghosn for underreporting his compensation by tens of millions of dollars. Nissan has had a sharp decline in profits and turmoil with its partner, French automaker Renault. Nissan says it also wants to have a permanent CEO in place by the end of October. With the latest, we're joined here in studio by John-Paul McDuffie, management professor here at the Wharton School and director of the program on vehicle and mobility innovation at Wharton's Mack Institute for Innovation Management. And joining us on the phone, Richard Dasher, director of the U.S. Asia Technology Management Center at Stanford University. John Paul, it's been too long. Good to see you again.
Good to be back.
Richard, great to have you with us.
Thanks, Dan.
So, Richard, your focus on this part of the world, I don't think this was a surprise to many people as we have seen things play out with Nissan, first with Carlos Ghosn and now with Saikawa.
No, when it turned out that the internal investigation inside Nissan into financial wrongdoings by management went further than just Ghosn and also Ghosn's lieutenant, Kelly. Saikawa really had no choice but to offer to resign when it came around and found out that he had benefited from some similar financial engineering. It's very much a kind of traditional Japanese thing to do. When he resigned, he denied any wrongdoing, but said that company policy had been violated. And that, he did say that he was going to give the money back. This is sort of what you have to do if you're the leader of a group in Japan. You have to take responsibility for anything on your watch.
Yeah, and I guess this also highlights, again, and while Toyota was more of a manufacturing problem, again, the issues surrounding automakers to stay up with what is going on globally in terms of sales and the numbers that they are expected to reach, it is very much like the U.S. in many cases.
Yes, it is. I think that the pressures under the auto industry to consolidate because of very expensive kind of transitions to major new types of vehicles and the question of self-driving cars and so forth is great. You're seeing Toyota partnering with Subaru and with other companies in developing new platforms for cars. But, you know, this is one where both Nissan and Renault really seem to be trying to divorce themselves from each other.
John-Paul?
Yeah, I completely agree with Richard that this was probably inevitable, certainly after this, revelation about the financial engineering to give him this extra pay. I mean, he also was deeply associated with Carlos Ghosn. Carlos Ghosn elevated him to CEO. He was responsible for corporate governance, particularly in the last 2 years of being CEO. And so, you know, the investigation has revealed all kinds of lapses in corporate governance, rubber stamp processes, board meetings that lasted 20 minutes. You know, I mean, Carlos Ghosn may have helped create that, but the other leaders that were part of that group bear that responsibility too. So I think it would have caught up with him sooner or later, and probably they were already in process to find a new CEO. This latest revelation just accelerated the timetable.
And now there's even the numbers coming out that in terms of Kelly, Greg Kelly, they say that his alleged misconduct cost the company about 35 billion yen, which relates to about 330 million U.S. dollars. So you're talking about the second in command or one of the higher ups in command. The impact, $330 million, throw on Carlos Ghosn, now throw on Saikawa, and you're talking about the potential of a $1 billion impact here.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate that a senior HR guy ends up being so complicit in all of this mishandling of corporate compensation, executive compensation. You know, I'm sure that Carlos Ghosn pushed him towards it, but when Kelly agreed to help him, it clearly elevated Kelly to the board, to a pretty high life of traveling around the world. And, you know, he, in an interview, was the first to identify this overcompensation situation for Saikawa, which has led directly to this resignation. So, you know, Kelly was the source on that. I mean, it's plausible to me that Saikawa, you know, said, what about my compensation? And now that there was a process in place for manipulating stuff to help the execs out, he gets a tidy, you know, $400,000 bonus from that, and very likely didn't pay a lot of attention. And that's on him. But it's just a sign that things are out of control.
Richard, what does this do now to the structure and the leadership moving forward of Nissan when you have all of these missteps at the top, and especially coming at a time when the sales numbers for Nissan are not as good as they probably should be?
Well, it's interesting that the Nissan-Renault partnership had some really complicated rules about just how much influence each company can have over the other. Renault has a 43% stake in Nissan, and that's a voting with voting rights. But conversely, Nissan has a 15% stake in Renault, and that's has no voting rights. Yet, the rules of how the companies are supposed to work together is that Nissan can increase its shares in Renault if Renault tries to get into the governance of Nissan in an inappropriate way. So this is all extremely complicated, especially because Renault has the right, according to the agreement, to appoint the COO of Nissan, who now becomes the acting CEO. So the acting CEO is going to be Mr. Yamauchi, and he has been seen as a bridge between the Nissan-Renault alliance. But I think that the board is going to work as quickly as possible to find a permanent replacement that probably will move Nissan toward more independence. I do think they're probably going to reduce each other's stake in the two companies.
John Paul?
Yes, I agree. I mean, the alliance between Renault and Nissan, now Mitsubishi, was held up for a long time as a, you know, one of the rare alliances in the auto industry that seemed to work. And now people are saying, look at it, it's a mess. And both those things are, I think, true. This kind of crisis moment for the auto industry, as Richard alluded to early on, all the pressures to invest in these new technologies, the fact that after a long run of pretty good sales, sales are starting to drop. I think that will give Renault and Nissan and Mitsubishi a lot of reason to stay together. I think if it were less true that there's this incredible pressure for consolidation and collaboration, the centrifugal forces of this crisis might really pull the alliance completely apart. But right. I think these firms can't afford to go it alone at this point. And so the discussions going on between Renault and Nissan, despite all of this conflict, seem to have been unusually, you know, they're moving towards something, a lower stake of Renault in Nissan. They're still negotiating over it. But that was such a, you know, a flashpoint issue for Nissan, the idea that Ghosn was pushing towards Renault actually taking over Nissan fully, having a full merger with Renault as the dominant partner. For that to get removed as a flashpoint, even with all this craziness going on, is basically a good sign that the alliance will survive, I think.
Does this have an impact, though, and it really doesn't probably here in the United States, but does this have an impact on Nissan in Japan?
Well, I mean, sure. The it's bad for Nissan's brand in every way. All of this revelation of terrible corporate governance is not going to help them. There's some potential nationalist feeling that gets stirred up, right, by the idea that the people who decided to go public with the allegation against Ghosn were just trying to, you know, prevent not only malfeasance, but the possible takeover. Nissan is much bigger than Renault. It's viewed as having had, you know, the superiority in engineering and a lot of advanced technologies. The idea that smaller Renault would somehow control Nissan, you know, didn't make a lot of sense in most strategic ways, maybe in some corporate governance ways, but certainly would have offended the not only Nissan employees, but the Japanese public. So there's that possibility. I think actually the U.S. is a big challenge for them. It's a very important market. They have a lot of plants here. To me, it's a cautionary tale about when these big auto companies set these super aggressive sales goals and say, you know, for Volkswagen, it's we were going to be number one. For Toyota, it's we're going to be number one.
Yeah.
It was close to that for the Alliance. And you start doing these things like you sell at a loss, or you cut your margins, or you push a lot of your manufactured products out to rental car companies, which degrades the resale and the brand. And there's so many examples of it being a bad idea, yet Nissan went exactly down that road in the U.S. And now they're trying to back away from it, and it's not so easy. And to have the corporate, you know, crisis doesn't help. But it's always hard. You've got to go back to getting profits for your dealers. You usually have to do it by refreshing your product line and bringing something brand new that excites the public.
Right.
And that's hard to do when you're in a financial crisis.
Yeah. Richard?
I do think you're absolutely right. And the relationship is substantive. It's not just a, you know, cross-holding of stock. The companies have a number of joint platforms to build cars on top of. And I think that you're absolutely right that the pressures on the car industry will probably keep them from completely dissolving the alliance, but they desperately want to restructure it. And in this restructuring, there may even be a new partner coming in. Earlier this year, Renault tried to partner with Fiat Chrysler, and that did not work out, largely because Fiat Chrysler saw that Nissan had not been really involved in the discussions and that Nissan was reluctant. So it could be that we'll have an even grander alliance in which the sort of management influence of any of the partners would be less.
You're listening to Knowledge at Wharton on Sirius XM 132 Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. We're talking about the resignation of Nissan CEO Hiroto Sakawa. You're joined here in studio by John Paul McDuffie of the Wharton School, Richard Dasher joining us on the phone from Stanford University. You can join in 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866. Or if you'd like, send us a comment on Twitter at BizRadio132 or my Twitter account, which is at DanLoney21. I guess when you look at Richard, the overall scenario that played out here, because you have the situation with Carlos Ghosn, because you have the issues with Greg Kelly, because you have the structural issues of the company, not only the earnings report, which was not very good, they were going to cut, some 12,000 jobs as well. This is a perfect storm for Sakawa, and to a degree, I almost feel like the financial side of it, the performance benefit side of it, is almost just the cherry on top of the sundae.
I think you're right. I really think that Sakawa had to take the initiative in offering to resign as soon as it became kind of evident what was going to be reported to the board in this internal investigation into the financial mishandling. And by doing this, he's trying to preserve the company's brand. This is something that especially applies in Japan. The president of a company will take sort of, you know, ritual suicide responsibility step down when something bad about the company's brand comes up. He at first offered to stay on until they could find a permanent replacement, and the board told him no thank you. So he will step down as of September 16.
I guess it's the business version of Harry Caray, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And this is something where there are really two patterns. One is immediate step down, as is ultimately happening here with Nissan.
Yeah.
And the other is when the president does say he will resign and then stays on until the problem can be solved. And Sakawa expressed great regret that he was not able to stay until the, quote, problem was solved.
Right.
And, you know, this is one of those things where if he had not done that, it would be a lot worse.
John Paul?
Yeah, I think the contrast between this apology culture, the significance of apologies in Japanese culture generally, and certainly in the business sense, and the U.S. and some of the legal implications is really pretty fascinating here. For Sakawa to resign because the company is in deep trouble is consistent with that pattern. This addition of some personal scandal for personal gain is something that's probably less likely to be forgiven. But in general, if a senior executive admits even to pretty bad things, but it was all for the sake of the company in some mm-hmm. sense, then the ritual does seem to help, at least in a lot of ways. But, and you know, we have an era of corporate governance in which transparency is considered also to be a very good thing. Nissan is revealing a lot of details about all this mismanagement in right. general beyond and lack of good oversight. It's probably going to open them up to a lot of lawsuits, particularly in the U.S., from shareholders. And that's, that's one of these things about global business that we learn. You know, the norms may be very different in different countries. And so that choice to reveal a lot about how bad their corporate governance was is something maybe a lot of U.S. companies wouldn't do because they would fear the legal repercussions.
Well, Richard, one of the things that Carlos Ghosn had said after he was ousted and through his legal process is that he said that this was, on his side, a case of clear discrimination against foreigners. And that's one of the narratives that he still is holding on to. I think that is taken away a little bit when you're talking about Sakawa, now no longer being the CEO of the company.
Well, yeah, and in the time since Ghosn was arrested and, you know, taken off the management of Nissan, there have been several high-ranking executives who are foreign, not Japanese, who have followed him by leaving the company. And I think that this is sometimes it looks a little bit like a rise of nationalism. And I try to imagine the factions inside the upper management inside Nissan, because I'm sure that there were people who associated Sakawa with Ghosn and really wanted to get rid of that generation completely. But I think that in some ways, Sakawa saw himself, and maybe there were others in this faction, as standing up for a major Japanese national brand when it was under threat, existential threat, from foreign sources. The Japanese side in Nissan has always been afraid of the power of the French government, because the French government owns 15% of Renault, mm-hmm. and according to the Nissan side, has a kind of activist habit of demanding greater control for French entities in these international partnerships.
John Paul?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to imagine the kind of journey of Sakawa, you know, from in becoming Ghosn's right-hand man and helping with so much cost-cutting and layoffs and really painful things that were being done early in the turnaround process. He probably, in some ways burned some bridges with some people within Nissan. Then he turns around and supports this, arresting of Ghosn, and seemed to be genuinely to feel personally betrayed by a lot of what was discovered.
Yeah.
Then he's the head guy who's left, you know, being seen as responsible for a lot of what happened on Ghosn's watch. And, apparently the couple of the characterizations of his press conference yesterday when he resigned said he didn't seem, although he used words of apology, all that contrite, more a bit bitter. And it's perhaps not that hard to imagine why.
So as we sit here right now, where does Nissan let's focus on the auto side, the automaking side of it for a second.
Yep.
Where does Nissan need to go now to kind of reestablish itself for what it was, say, 5 years ago, 10 years ago?
Well, I mean, getting a new CEO in place and trying to draw the line under this, you know, really terrible period and trying to leave it behind is super important. It will be hard because Carlos Ghosn's trial will occur, and Ghosn is pushing to have as many details as possible of things that were done you know, that certainly he benefited from, but were done by Nissan people. He's going to want that stuff out there. So it's going to be hard for them to leave that behind. There's no remedy for, you know, an auto company kind of turning things around, like bringing a bunch of exciting new products to the market. That's what helps people forget bad old products, helps people forget all the rental car Nissans that they were seeing on a hugely regular basis. Maybe helps dealers feel a little hope that they're going to have some margin and profit again and keep them from being demotivated, a way to keep executives from leaving or to attract talent again. I mean, Nissan has had, as Richard mentioned, a real talent drain of people leaving in the middle of this crisis. You know, how do you invest in that new product? The development cycle for cars is slow. You don't just click your finger and have it next year. And I don't know enough about products, the product pipeline of Nissan, to know where they are. They are considered to be a leader in some of the autonomous technologies. 2020 Olympics are coming up, and all the auto companies in Japan are going to be showcasing various displays of their advanced technology. Nissan, I think, has been working on an auto taxi concept for the Olympics, along with a popular game company, for example. So those are things they'll try to focus attention on. You know, it's a little bit like Volkswagen after Dieselgate. Suddenly they're the biggest champions of a new line of electric cars, and those are about to come out. It's taken them a while, but they're going to really hope that that draws the attention to the present, the future, and gets people excited again.
Richard?
Especially because the stock price is down and the entire industry is seeing a slowdown this year. I think that Nissan is going to probably hunker down and try to deliver top quality at reasonable prices with good financial terms. And I agree that you can't just announce your way out of this with some sort of a hot new product. But I do think that they could do a better job of making their impressive research and development into some of these new areas like autonomous vehicles better known. Toyota has been extremely kind of public in the way it's approaching this new era, and Nissan reasonably has not, but I do think they're going to hunker down and just try to be really top quality.
Gentlemen, thanks very much. Greatly appreciate it. Good to see you, John Paul.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Richard, great to have you back with us.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you. John Paul McDuffie from here at the Wharton School, Richard Dasher at Stanford University. We will take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by author Steve Farber to talk about his new book, Love is Just Damn Good Business. We'll talk with him coming up next. Sirius XM 132, Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School.